Okay, these are continuing dialogues with Dr. Chetna Kripalu. We are still looking at the feelings wheel. There's obviously quite a bit of information in here. The big divide in this wheel is between feelings when one's needs are met and feelings when one's needs are not met. You know, they have a nice way of expressing this. You know, we've been talking about meditation and the perspective that you have been offering. And the question here is regarding the fact that, you know, feelings are an internal reality. They're very much visceral. They're felt. There's the physical body feels them also. Thinking, certainly, I'm sure there's some kind of physical reaction in thinking also. But in feeling, there really seems to be much more of a physical, visceral aspect to it all. You know, and when the dichotomy is shown here in this feelings wheel regarding when needs are met, needs are not met. And again, the needs may be a variety of different types. You know, there's fear, there can be panic, there can be regret, there can be confusion, hopelessness, fatigue, tiredness, despair. There can be scorn, there can be boredom, there can be sickness. You know, there's a whole list of these things, right? And when a person is in that space, you talked about space just a moment back, in this, quote, negative space, there's a real sense of that being maintained. It takes on a life of its own. So I wonder if you could talk some more about that in connection with the physical body and in connection with meditation, with regards to how it takes on a life of its own, what the body does or how the body is impacted by that, and then the role of meditation, you know, so that one can detect, oh, this is happening to me. You know, because when it's happening, one is like in it. So maybe you can talk about that, however you want to go with that. So,
yeah, so this is the loop we've created, and that's why you see these conditions called depression and anxiety or whatever, different personality issues, or you can give it all these names. But what happens is, again, it depends on, again, I think to some extent, we come also as kids and babies and everything. Some innate nature is there. Some of them, for example, some kids are excited, jumpy, all that. Sure. Some kids are calmer and introverts. They won't talk about it. So those are, I think, some of them which you come with. But what happens is during your and they say this happens even in the womb. You know, even. From the environment the mom is going through and the talks which they kind of imbibe from what the mom's talking to herself and, you know, things like that. So it can come from that. But anyway, so as a kid grows up, as a child grows, there is so many things the child goes through, and that already sets the beginning of a subconscious mind, they say, from the age of 12. Before that, they have different brainwave states where they're just, the whole thing they say is between up to the age of 3, like between the age of 1 and 3, the children are in a delta wave state. What means is they are half asleep and half kind of seeing the outside world, but most of it is how they're looking at their inner worlds. Yeah. And that's why you talk about these people, you know, not these people, these kids talking about an imaginary friend. They see things we don't see because we are not like them in the same brainwave state. And then as they grow up to 6, they have a mix when they're trying to interact with people and environment. And so they learn. And so that's why it's important how the environment is that at that time is what they learn. And they kind of go from their inner environment, which means like whatever they're more in touch with their feelings and, you know, even the thoughts come in. And the thoughts change as they interact with people around them. It is parents, family, friends, peers, all things happening. And the things which happen in the world and how their parents are reacting to it. And that gives, that's in itself sets up a belief system. Mm-hmm. So
it's the formation of a belief system. It's really that the mind is being formed. You know, once a baby is born, or even before that, the mind is in a developmental stage. The brain is being developed. They say all the way until age 25, and then there's neuroplasticity and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know,
so, but after the age of 12 is when it's much more the outer environment and how the inner environment tries to adjust to more of the outer. Mm-hmm. It should be the opposite, which is what we're trying to discuss in this whole thing.
Yeah.
But that's what happens. So now you are more trying to figure out how you can adjust to the outside world and the people around. And, you know, so those are that's what we talk about as you grow older in the teen years. Yeah. You're really trying to find your spot or your, in the world. And so you're really not paying too much attention to your inner world, what it actually is, which you were doing when you're younger. And now you're really trying to, literally adjust to the outside world.
Sure.
And so it depends. Now you have this mix or this interaction between your belief system, which is set up in a certain way, and how you interact with the outside world. And that makes a big difference in how the child or the teenager, how you move into adulthood. After a certain point, there is like I said before, a conditioning which is already set up. Does that mean you cannot change? No, but it's harder. That's why we say as you get older, it's harder, because some of these habits are so set in. These circuits are so strong that they take hold of a big part of your subconscious mind, and you don't know that. And as you interact with more and more outside world, these two inner and outer world keep interacting more and more. And what happens to it, depends on, their interaction with the outside world. So it's different for different people. And that's why, and then certain expectations start building up for each person, what they expect from life. And the desires also come by with the interaction with the external environment, and some of it is innate. And so these two things happen. And so because of some preconditioning in your subconscious mind, you're not able to attain or your desire and manifest it. And so there comes your expectations not being met.
Right.
And that's where the requirements not being met. And so there are certain emotions you go through. So, so that gives rise to all these negative emotions.
Yes.
And now what happens is if this, for some people, that's how they become more negative Nellies, or, they just look at everything, start looking at it every negatively. Every point, every corner comes from fear, doubts, mistrust, all these things. So this loop, which you're talking about, in the beginning is only one. So let's say a negative thought arises, then there is certain, because of the thought, you act in a certain way, so that's your behavior. So then that behavior starts giving you certain feelings or emotions. And then the emotions now, again, gives rise to the more negative thoughts. But what happens over time, if this loop is again and again constantly going around, then that becomes your personality, and meaning like, this is who I am, this is what's happening to me, and that personality is getting stronger and stronger, meaning how you think, how you act, and how you feel. It becomes like more of who you are.
Yes.
And when you more and more, as this happens, that becomes your reality. So you're stuck in that reality, and that becomes who you are. So personality becomes your personal reality, and that is how your persona is now. And what happens to the body is, because the body now, what it does is it adjusts to it, it's adjusted to this personality. So now it's more of this constant loop where it becomes your digestive system doesn't work properly, so it's constantly in a flux.
Right.
And now your heart is always racing. You have this palpitation, nervousness. You don't feel good. Then your body becomes, because again, remember, negative energy, negative thoughts, and all this loop takes away a lot of energy being scattered all over. So now you're depleted because you have all these 10,000 thoughts of, you know, multiplying these negative thoughts and loops. So you have no energy at all. So you develop, you know, aches and pains in your body, which is, you know, you can name it as fibromyalgia. Then you have this fatigue constantly because you have chronic nothing fatigue. To conserve this energy. Yeah. It's all scattered and dissipated.
Right.
Then they have the chronic fatigue syndrome. Sure. So there are so many of these. You can name a thousand. They've come up with these diagnoses.
Yes.
But what happens in your body is this is what happens.
Yes.
So now you're stuck because this is, you think,
it's
is your personality and personal reality.
Sure.
So now when it becomes too much for you, it becomes too much to handle and you say, I can't live like this.
Yeah.
So that's where the suicide comes.
Yeah, suicide
that's where you kind of say that I want to end this because I can't handle this anymore.
Right.
And of course, you know, that is one part of it, the mental part of it. The body also, now it completely, every system does its own thing. It's not coordinated.
Right.
It's not working together. So you can get anything from cancer to degenerative diseases or multiple issues because the body is not able to work together because of these negative thought, the mind-body connection, which is constantly doing this, which is this, you know, scattered all over. So that is the effect of the mind, you know, mind.
So that's very, very well said. And, you know, when an individual is in that zone of this entire, this left zone here of all this negative stuff that's shown here, you know, they're fatigued, they're feeling discouraged, there could be remorse, regret, any of these things, right? When that actually happens, you are saying that a meditation technique should be applied at that point. Could you talk about that some more? Because I think you've given great background about what the connections are. But if you could kind of take this a little bit further, that when this actually happens, which happens in people's lives all the time, they may hear these audios, they may hear other people's audios and so many things, and they may agree. I mean, I agree with everything that you're saying here. Nonetheless, you know, when this actually happens, there is a sense of being consumed by it. It's, you know, like your whole mind, your body, it's consumed by that particular powerful emotion or mental state. You know, someone who's feeling helpless, for example, they don't see a way out of their situation. Someone who is feeling very much stunned by a situation, like a shock of some sort, or someone who is very preoccupied, like in an addiction, for example. You know, so when any of these things are going on, they're all different in their own way, but they're all related. You know, the reality of life is that there is a sense of just being funneled into that. And then of course, there's support groups, there's the things that you're teaching. But what does a person do when that actually happens? When that happens at that time, is there something to be done at that time? What are your recommendations and thoughts about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we teach these tools which people can use. And the easiest and the quickest tool is the heart focus technique from HeartMath. But the idea is for people to recondition or, you know, reprogram your subconscious and get it out of the loop is firstly to recognize the awareness to say, okay, this is a loop I have and I want to do something about it.
And it's very fast and it's very subtle because when it comes up with a trigger or a situation, or even if there isn't an external trigger, one is just sitting by himself or herself and some memory comes up, something comes up, or one starts looking at one's life or whatever, say, oh my God, this happened, this is going on, this problem at work, X, Y, Z, one gets caught up just within themselves. You know, so you're talking about recognizing that is happening. Could you talk more about that and how to recognize that?
So the thing is, again, this is why we want to create routines in our lives, and this is what we teach in the meditation classes or course, is you want to do the 15 minutes in the morning as soon as you wake up, which you start with gratitude, you do a small meditation technique, and set your intention for the day or visualize what you actually want.
Mm-hmm.
Because that sets in itself a different frame of mind and where the mind is going. Now, besides that, if you go to work, you have the same people coming at you, that can happen. But again, this is why we talk about these timers. We talk about, you know, alerts or apps which we create to do these techniques, simple techniques, where even if your mind is scattered or, you know, trying to go all over the place, you use this technique to inhale and exhale. Just focus on the breathing, because everybody can breathe. Everybody does breathe already.
Yeah.
It's just taking your focus into the breath and not in your mind, and focusing on your heart space, because that's easy to do. Of course, when I'm saying easy in the beginning, even that's hard. But the more you do it, you know you have a tool there. So you want to completely do that. So what happens in that, it gets you into this habit of knowing that when you do this technique, you disrupt your thought process or your thought loop.
Yes.
And you feel better. You go into this go-go mode, the anxiety mode, into relaxed mode. And that's a possibility. You know that it happens. Mm-hmm. So when you do more number of times during the day, even for 1 minute, even if it's not that long, the disruption of this thought itself will give you the habit of, you know, going into that awareness of the thought loop. So there is a thought loop. So I think that's the key when you do these, you know, tools during the day. So as you do more and more, you will know that it, the more you disrupt is, your baseline starts changing anyway of the body, where it goes into this relaxed mode and things start improving in your life. But the other thing is, you will know to, you know, be aware more of your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So after a while, the app or the bell may not be necessary for you to realize where your thoughts are going. So that is the key. So when you realize where your thoughts are going, you have the ability to change it, to replace it, to discard it, to, you know, so not allow it to take over.
So these are key points. To replace it, discard it, not allow it to take over. And what else did you say? You just said a couple of other things.
Just ignore it?
Ignore it. Yes. Yeah, so it begins with a recognition, right, that there's a loop that's beginning. And that loop is not something that I want. Like, so for example, if that's happening in my life for some reason or another, which has happened before and it probably will happen again, right? But if it happens, or when it happens, there at that moment, at that time, that confidence should be there, would you say, to recognize that this is something I don't want.
Exactly. And so to recognize and use the tool, because most of the people know that they don't like it. They recognize
it. And it's not going to get you anywhere. I mean, that's the other, maybe
yeah,
more of a thoughtful way of looking at that. Also, if I continue in this loop pattern, how is that going to be beneficial to my body, to my mind, to my life at all?
So the first thing to recognize, you know, is I don't want to live like this anymore. Meaning with this,
yeah.
I'm tired of,
yeah.
you know, living
yeah.
in my head. I'm yeah. tired of living this way.
Yeah.
And what's making you live this way is your thoughts. And it's actually very simple. It's actually very easy. If you think about it, I have control of my thoughts. That's the first thing you need to tell yourself.
Yes.
It may not be in the beginning and even after a long time, but mm-hmm. it really helps you be aware of it. And like I said, you want to disrupt it with a tool because it's not easy to control it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to disrupt it because when you start breathing and you're gone, you know, that thought loop is gone. Something else may come up, but at least for a brief moment, mm-hmm. you know that you're not in the same thought loop, because otherwise you can drive yourself into the thought loop and then the loop connecting thoughts, and it may lead you to a very bad place.
Very
when
quickly.
Going to,
it happens, yes.
Yeah, and complete anxiety. Now you have a panic disorder.
Attack, yeah.
Panic attack, or a complete down in depression.
Right.
So,
or like a breakdown, like an emotional crying breakdown, crying spells, those kinds of things. You know, so you talk about breath. When you say that, keep your attention on the breath, which is the heart math technique, you know, one of the techniques. If the attention goes on the breath, then it is a deliberate attention that is placed on the inward breath, the outward breath. But even when a person does that, there's still the stuff that they've been thinking about. You know, so now you've got two different thoughts going on.
But so, what the breath does
yeah.
and the heart meditation does,
yeah.
now you're using your heart intelligence with the breath to align your mind with it. So what happens is...
Okay, hold on 1 second. You're using your heart intelligence to align the mind with that intelligence and not keep it, quote, aligned with this harmful loop. Because the mind is... like a part of the mind is aligned in a harmful way with this repetitive loop, which is going to use energy and break it down and cause anxiety and panic. It's a downward turn. But to realign that from the heart itself, right, through the breath, where there is positive emotion, is that what you're saying there?
So, again, remember, heart doesn't have these thoughts coming in.
Right.
So when you use the heart... Right. So it's one for compassion. It's one for love. It's one for bliss. We've known associations with those kind of feelings. Right. And when you look at the heart space. So, and of course there's more scientific background about heart rate variability and all of that, but let's go with the emotion part of it. So whenever your associations you build, it's with the heart space is more about all these wonderful positive feelings.
Yeah.
So what you're trying to do is with breath and heart together is you're using that as a lighthouse or as a starting point for the other system to align to that, which is more doable, number one, because it's easy to breathe in and breathe out. Second thing is that actually brings a better homeostasis in your being, where now the mind aligns to the body. That means if you have positive feelings, then the mind has to learn to send positive thoughts.
Yeah.
Remember we talked about the loop.
Yeah.
If it starts with a positive thought, then the chemical which is secreted, I mean, like the the behavior changes, then the emotions change, the experience changes.
Exactly.
So we're trying to go the reverse with the heart, where you're trying to build a positive emotion. So then now the loop which the mind gets the information is, hey, I'm all happy and,
changed. The perspective is changed.
Right. So now this feeling has to be matched by the mind. So the mind now is in its whole library of, thoughts. Look for thoughts which match that, which is going to be positive
That's
now.
Very powerful.
So that is what we're trying to do, which is an easier thing to do.
So you're looking for thoughts that actually match the positive aspects that are shown on the feeling wheel, So again, just going back to that loop, and this is a nice way of putting it. But there's a lot of content, in that loop, because one thought is connected to another. Someone starts thinking about a particular difficulty that they've had or some troubling situation. Then they start thinking about that. That connects to something else. It connects to something else. So it's almost like a web that is generated starting at one point. And then this massive web is generated, and then in that web, a person is really just rolling around in there, in that complexity, and then that becomes like an imprisoned state almost. It's like a entrapped state. And when a person is in that entrapped state, the negative emotion begins, because it's a dysphoric state. It's a state where, a person doesn't want that, but the mind is generating that because they're dealing with some core difficulty, some core problem, So what is the role of that neutral space you were talking about before in relation to the core difficulty that is generating the web? Do you see my question?
What do you mean by core?
So, for example, let's say someone has had an argument at work, a really serious argument with the boss or someone, and now that is lingering. And so they're day in and day out, they're thinking about that. They're still going to work, but there's problems there. So that becomes a core problem there. And then from there, that's affecting family life, it's affecting so many. So that now they're thinking about that a lot, they're feeling all this dysphoric emotion. So there's the core problem over there. So what is the role of meditation in relation to such a problem that a person is kind of stuck in? And then, of course, the role of counseling and therapy, and then, of course, medications also. So these are multifaceted interventions, but I just wanted to ask you about that.
The point is that is the core started a long time ago. So this is not the core of the problem. The argument is just the topper, meaning that person, whoever got into that argument, got into an argument because of the disassociation between the body and the mind. And exacerbated.
So you're saying there wouldn't not even have been an argument?
Yeah, it would have been handled completely differently.
So, so that's interesting.
Yes, so that's what we're trying to do. So now we're trying to come back to this loop which I was telling you about.
Yeah.
Is remember, where is the thought generated from? In the mind, but the mind is a library of yeah. you know, previous memories, yes. what you've been through.
Right.
So it is really looking to match whatever the rest of the body is going through. So what we are trying to do here is set a new, you know, like equilibrium or homeostasis by using the heart math or using the breath with, you know, the you know, increasing the vibration of the heart, expanding the heart, you know, that kind of thing, where it's going to now look under its library of thoughts about positive emotions or positive thoughts, which will bring about this, keep this loop going. But remember, this doesn't happen in a day because this is something new you're not used to. So over time, over month, over the negative loop has been built on in the last 20, 30, 40 years.
It has a lot of material within it,
so,
a lot of interconnection.
Exactly. So when you're trying to change it, you have to be so consistent, almost like take it as this is like the everything in your life. This is the main thing which you want to do to change your life. And do these techniques, I mean, day in and day night, I mean, not saying nighttime, but when you're awake, so consistently that your body now, your mind learns that this is how I want it. And it's not going to be any otherwise. So what happens over time with, again, there are other things with affirmations, you're trying to, you know, you want to tell this, because it's not just the technique. You have to, you know, combine it, because remember we talked about the subconscious thing, mind, you know, part of it. So when you do these affirmations, because right now what you're trying to do is just that loop, but there is a lot in subconscious mind which will bring it up again. So we have to work on it, you know, at the same time. So that's where the affirmations come in. That's where you have to constantly work on also, where you're going to say the opposite and opposite and opposite. So all the things you want in your subconscious consciously. So when you're doing this in parallel, over time, your loops are going to change, and that's how people reverse their illnesses, because now they know they're not associated, they're not claiming this personality which has become the personality right now. It's going to be different because they are creating the new person they want to be. And the problem is we are so caught up, like you said, in what we don't want, we have forgotten that there is something else that we can actually create, is what you want. So this is, again, a transition to convert your thoughts into, or your, you know, visualizing, whatever you however you want to look at it, into what you want consistently now. So those are all positive thoughts, positive feelings, which brings, you know, which are which come from it. And that is what we want to create. But this has to be a constant effort, consistent effort of knowing that you are in charge, because we are. Think about it this way. Every thought which comes, if you're aware of it, you're not going to allow all the negative thoughts because of all these things you've learned now, what it does to you. But that's the thing. So you have to put in the beginning, or even for a lifetime, all these things, you know, maybe a tattoo or, you know, a band in your hand and index cards, everything to remind how aware you can be of every thought which comes through. Because in human beings, that's the thing. You can, your thoughts can get you sick and your thoughts can get you well. So this is just, if you really simply put it, that's how powerful we are. Because our frontal lobe is the maximum, you know, like 50%. When compared to all the animals. So we have control over a lot of things, and that is why we want to use our thoughts to our benefit rather than the other way around.
Right, right, definitely. So in looking at the feeling wheel, what you're kind of saying, if I understand you correctly, even when a person is feeling any of the negative emotions, you know, feelings when needs are not met, I mean, that's just the way what they've put it here. But even if that feeling comes, to de-identify with that and to go into that space as if the needs are met, as if you were getting what you wanted. Just do the heart math technique, do the breathing techniques, move out of that negative loop, that harmful loop, as rapidly as possible to prevent damage to the body and to prevent strengthening the loop. And by doing so, one is moving into a different zone completely. And while in that zone, to have the courage to stay in that zone. Would you say that that's kind of a summary
absolutely.
Of what you... Okay, I see. All right, that's good. So, you know, this all sounds good. It's a matter of practice. It's a matter of doing it. And what if someone listens to these recordings and tries this, but they are having difficulty coming out of that zone. Either they do the heart math technique, they do what you're asking them to do, they're trying their best, but there's too much overpowering from within because of the difficulty or whatever. What do you suggest in that situation?
Well, the thing in all this is, again, consistency.
So you're saying the consistency of the practice will eventually break through all those blocks.
It will. It's just that important. And even when they meditate, mm-hmm. it doesn't happen immediately. With more practice, again, you know, even after years of meditation, you still have all these thoughts coming to you and, you know, come rushing into your head and everything. Yeah. So it's something we have to work with. And you have to, you know, the other thing is when you sit for meditation, meaning whoever sits for meditation, after, you know, a while, initially it's 5 minutes, if you make it a point to sit in meditation and really not get up from the meditation, however strong your body symptoms are telling you to get up and, this is hurting, that's hurting, you know, things like that, you get into that space where you become, you know, a nobody, meaning mm-hmm. like where you mm-hmm. don't identify yourself with current personality, mm-hmm. then things start really, really getting better because that is what we need when we start creating what you want. And then when you know what you want to create, you're going to create, excellent things. It's not going to be disease. It's not going to be imbalance. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be anything. In fact, when you get to that space, you tap into this, and we'll go into another recording with that. You tap into this universal field where you become one with the universe, and you're no longer self-absorbed. So why are we in this mire in the first place is because we're so much in our mind and the body. So we're not self-absorbed, meaning we're not in our body and our mind, which is the cause of suffering. Mm-hmm. So when you tap into this universal field, you feel this abundance of love. You feel this kind of being a part of this whole world, which is the highest vibration possible, which automatically is a good communication with your body to kick on this starting of a healing journey. And if you do it again and again, the body always receives positive information about healing. And it almost, somebody said this when I was listening, it was very interesting. Whenever you go into meditation in that space, your body is happy because your mind is not in the way. And it can heal.
Right.
So that's what we're trying to create. Mm-hmm. And the body automatically starts healing. And you will see this is how people go into spontaneous remission. People reverse their illnesses. People can reverse any illness possible. It's not, you know, impossible. So this mm-hmm. is what is the extent of creation, how we can be in charge. So we are so much more powerful than we think we are. And we don't have to be stuck in this in this body and mind kind of a reality, which we think where we are. And this is the whole cause of suffering.
Sure, definitely. Because the body definitely takes a brunt of all of the negative emotion. But it can also take on the positive emotion. Yeah, or even, you know, like this open emotion, emotion that is not constricted. And there's a sense of ease in life. There's a sense of, you know, gratitude. You know, like people who take vacations and they go to a beautiful resort. And when you go, the first 5-10 minutes when a person is there seeing the scenery, there's like a sense of how beautiful. There's a sense of relaxation. You know, but that is temporary.
But why? Because what happens, what's the difference between when you go for vacation is you being in the present moment.
Yeah, right.
That's all there is. So if we learn to be in the present moment each time, which is the only reality, everything is hunky-dory. The problem
doesn't matter where you are then.
Doesn't matter where you are. Doesn't matter if you have anything or not have anything. Of course, we need the basic stuff, I'm talking more in the terms of mind.
Of course.
But the problem is the moment your mind takes you into the past or brings the past in the present or brings the future in the present, there's a trouble.
Sure.
And so what does the body do? The body doesn't know the future that you're thinking in the future.
It's the worry about the future and regrets about the problems about the past, those kinds of things.
So the body is only trying to adjust to your mind. So it doesn't know that you're thinking about it in the future and the future hasn't come yet. Or the past is gone and the past is not here yet. It only knows what's happening in the present moment. So if you are thinking in the past and negative thoughts come up, that's the only thing the body is adjusting to. So if you imagine, if you're doing that constantly every moment,
yes,
your body is only going to do this, you start suffering, and that's what causes disease. So yes, every disease, the root cause is your mind. It's all psychosomatic, and that is why medications are not the answer.
No, they're just symptom management for some time.
They're symptom management, and they are just temporary.
Yeah.
So if we depend on it, we are in trouble.
Right.
That's why it doesn't cure anything. It just does its own. In fact, the body is so beautiful. It's magnificent because it still tries to do its best despite the loop we've created.
Yes.
And the degree to which a disease takes its, meaning like how much of a person, for example, let's say diabetes, the complications which the diabetes can cause is so dramatic in some people and takes their life away, or they die very quickly of suffering, or some people who have diabetes can live an entire life which with little bit of complication but not much.
Yes.
How does that happen? Because it's the mind-body loop, which is probably less of a negative loop, which the body is able to withstand. And finally, if it's you're beating up your body too much with your mind, your body has to break down. There is no choice.
Exactly.
It's at a point that it's not reversible anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why this is so important for us to know this. And
so
this is a lifetime work.
Yeah.
We have that is the only work we should be doing, in fact.
It's like in your office, there's a quote in the lobby: if you don't make time for your wellness, you'll make time for your illness. Right? Something like that.
Exactly, because that's what it means. And then you're stuck in this body. I mean, honestly, you can reverse anything at any point, but to recognize it, firstly, number one, to be aware of it is the question. I mean, is the point. And then to act on it and to apply it.
Yes.
Because you can take all the courses you want, you can do all the workshops you want, but if you don't apply it in your life, it doesn't work, because you're not in that, you're not breaking that loop, you're not bringing up your vibration, you're not creating a new future.
Absolutely.
How are you going to change anything? But the beauty of this thing is there is knowledge now to know that you can do it and how you can do it. So one needs to take that responsibility on themselves,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to say that I am responsible for bringing all this on.
Yeah.
Not anymore that God did this to me or somebody else did this to me and they didn't figure out. And
yeah,
the moment you do that, you're gone. That's when you can't change anything.
Right.
We have to stop doing that and take responsibility for everything which happens from the thought to the action, you know,
mm-hmm.
which we take in an everyday life.
But what about situations where people, you know, may say, as a response to what you're saying, that, you know, someone did this to me. Let's say someone who was abused, someone who was like 10 or 11 years old was physically abused, let's say, beaten, and, you know, maybe even sexually abused or something like that. Some kind of abuse is there. Well, that 10-year-old isn't at fault. But, you know, or do you say that somehow that 10-year-old is at fault still? So what is your response to something like that? Because if it's a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old, you know, some children who are just brought up in an abusive situation, they're exposed to all this trauma. And of course, there's like trauma-informed care and all that. But then they are living with that trauma. Are you saying that they need to de-identify with that trauma completely through the meditation work? I mean, so could you elaborate on that? Because let me see if I can clarify the question a little bit further, just even for myself. There are situations that, let's say, this particular person has created. Any particular person has created a lot of chaos in their own life. That's one thing. But there's also situations that one gets involved in that one has not created. There's others have created that for us, right? So if you could talk about both of those to begin with, maybe we can begin there and then kind of go from there. So.
Yeah, so we are not talking about what happens to us on the outside. That we have no control over. We are talking about how and what, how we perceive things and how we continue to perceive things.
Even things that have happened in the past.
Absolutely. And what happens in the future, how do you perceive it and create that negative loop and how you have created or brought it on, this condition. So we are not talking about the external environment at all.
Not at all.
Yes, it's a sad situation when the child goes through this abuse. Yes, the child is, well, no way, the child is not responsible. Whoever is responsible. But what happens is, the child now, it's not about easy or difficult. I'm just telling you as a fact what happens. So now the child is taking this incident, and which has happened already in the past, and bringing it constantly with a big charge, which we call it as emotion, literally it's a big charge. It's a huge charge in itself, the baggage, whatever you call it, consistently through his life, bringing it to his present, the every present he goes through. So what happens with that is you are not changing anything because you have caused that part of it. Mm-hmm. Now, you can say it's valid or not valid. That's not the point. That is the point we have control over. And if people know that they have control over, in that incident, in that time, it's not, you don't have to control it because you have to go through whatever you're going through.
Yes.
But can you not bring it to your present from the past or take it to the future? Yes, that's under your control.
Yes.
That is what we have to realize our true power. We have to work on it to say that I am not going to carry anything from my past because I had no control over the situation. I don't need, it is gone, it is done for, but I am making sure that the thoughts which I create now is not going to bring in those charge or emotions into this present so I can live a good life because it's done. And so my future, I am in control of right now, but changing the thoughts and, you know, the so-called the emotion and so-called the experience and the personality I create from now on. And this is what people don't know about.
No, it's very difficult to get this, actually. I mean, you know, you and I are talking about it, and I've heard you talk about this many times, and I'm sure others are going to listen to these recordings. And I think anybody listening to them would agree that what you're saying seems to be true. But I think what you're encouraging for people to do is to directly experiment with this. Because it is a type of experiment.
It is, absolutely. So that is under your control. Now, there is sometimes people think, let's say somebody's wronged them. They feel that it's valid that they feel like that.
Yeah.
Maybe, but who is it hurting?
It's hurting you. It's hurting
hurting the person.
Yeah.
Like, if I have been through something, a bad circumstance or event, I can say, oh, it's normal, it's natural, whatever I'm going through, it's inevitable. Who has created all these things about inevitable, normal, natural?
Right.
It's the society we've been living in, or you have created itself that this is, granted it's bad, I'm not saying it's good, but over time, you have to tell yourself that I don't want to live with this feeling anymore because I am hurting myself.
It's like you know, the society, due to its conditioning and conflicts and problems, has normalized intrapsychic pathology.
Correct. Absolutely. That's the best way of putting it. Saying that this is normal, so it's okay to be miserable.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what everyone says. I mean, this is like someone goes through a tough time, like spousal abuse or arguments at home. They say, well, you're going to feel depressed. You're going to feel this way. You know, but you're challenging that, really.
I am challenging that because the moment you realize you are in charge, you're saying, I'm not going to feel like that because it hurts me after all.
Sure.
It doesn't hurt the other person who did this to me. And there is a, forget about that person being punished and, you know, going to jail or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I am only worried about myself, not worried, concerned about myself, that I want to not live in, want to live life on my own terms. And what that means is I am in charge of every thought which comes through. I'm in charge of every feeling which I have because of that thought process. So I am going to be in control. So every time, this is why the awareness is important. Every time my mind goes into that, that event which goes through, you're going to say, it's because what happens with that is eventually when you do enough of this and it becomes a memory.
Sure.
And it doesn't have without a charge. And so what develops from that is wisdom.
Right.
Because what you learn from it. And if you learn or if you're not, then just ignore it. It's okay. But what you learn that who you are right now is very much to do what you've been through and you become. Because you wouldn't be that elevated or evolved person if that hadn't happened. But there's a lot of things to go in with, I mean, through that. But this is the best I can say for this matter, is to be more selfish that way when we're talking about it.
Yeah.
When I say selfish, I mean, like, how do you can control your inner environment. So this goes into the fact that we want to always focus on your how you can be in charge of your feelings. That means you're taking 100% responsibility onto yourself with everything happens around you.
Which also means, or is indicative of what we want the inner environment to be like. I mean, for example, you and I are sitting in this room right now, like a meditation room, like, you know, so it's like a little office meditation room. There's a certain environment here. Okay, so that's the external environment, which impacts the internal environment. But what you're saying is that we can actually choose to create our own inner environment, and we can do that by pretty much throwing the shackles off, getting rid of all the shackles, all the chains of all the problems of the past and issues, and take that entire thing and pretty much de-identify with it, throw it out, even though it's there in our memories, but we don't identify with that. We create a beautiful present at each time. And in doing so, the future unfolds.
Exactly. You don't have to worry about the future. It's going to be different no matter what.
You're right.
And remember, life is full of experiences.
Yeah.
So what happens with these memories which happen in your life,
yeah,
it just becomes an experience.
Yeah.
And no, with no charge in it. The problem is, when you give it this emotional charge is what the problem is.
Uh-huh.
You keep bringing it. And so the thought alone is enough for you to bring about this whole scheme, this whole sequence of events,
exactly,
and feelings and emotions. And now you're a mess without anything happening to you.
Right.
So you're in a survival mode constantly.
It's the fight-flight response.
So remember, when you're in the survival mode, what happens to your body? It's not growing. It's not healing. It's not functioning properly. Mm-hmm. That's what causes disease. So this is why it's important, mm-hmm, to say that, who are we punishing here? You're not punishing the person. You're not punishing anybody but yourself. So, mm-hmm, why am I punishing myself for somebody else's, you know,
yeah,
doing something bad to you? So don't,
sure,
do that. It's a different way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But you do need to look at it, because you live your life better in the future.
Well, also, you know, each person is living usually in a family, or there's a family that they come from. Even if they're staying single, there's a family. Or if they're in a relationship, there's some people that they're around. There's a social group. So no one is in isolation for the most part, you know. And the relationships that people have, they want them to be good. They want them to be happy. Everyone wants good relationships. Nobody wants problems. But there's a lot of internalization of other people's difficulties. There's a lot of dumping of your stuff on somebody else. And it just goes on. It's not just, you know, I mean, you're talking about like this internal development and freedom. So it seems to me that if a person actually moves into that space, that neutral space of inner freedom, and then from there they build what they want, the relationship structure would change also, or the way that the relationships are functioning would change. Would you say about something about that?
Absolutely. When you change, you know that you're in a higher vibration, you're in a better space. People love, that's why, you know, they can feel it. When you are changing, like when I am in a more peaceful state and I'm in a happy state, when I'm more energized, I have more people wanting to be with me. You,
yeah,
don't have to work at the relationship,
yeah,
because people love being around positive people.
Yeah.
Why do we do that? Because they bring a certain energy,
mm-hmm,
and a vibe, which we call it as vibes. We want to be around these people. If you look at a person who's highly energetic, happy all the time, would you want to be around that person or somebody else who is very sad and depressed and morose all the time?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be that, because,
yeah,
we have this something called as human beings energy transference. So when somebody's energetic...
Energy transference.
Correct.
Yeah, right.
So they bring on this energy, this aura around them, so beautiful that you can actually feel it, and you feel wonderful living in that or being in that vibration.
But you know, the thing is, traditional psychotherapy, and you're not doing psychotherapy right now or anything like that, or you know, in the practice, but traditional psychotherapy has this perspective of a lot of catharsis that is encouraged, expression of things that have happened, expression of emotions, expression of difficulties, expression of the problems, an analysis of the problems, a probing into the problems. And even psychoanalytic theory was like that. Psychodynamic theory tends to be like that. There are some others that have moved away from that, like reality therapy, etc. You know, but so when you look at these kinds of therapy approaches that are probing further and further into those loops, into those negative loops, into the problem loops, it seems to me what you're saying is that itself that kind of activity, although it may have some benefit to some extent, it really just strengthens those loops, and it doesn't really pull one out of that, but you're providing a totally different approach to move out of that space altogether. That's what it sounds like to me.
Absolutely. So it's almost like how many loops? We don't even know how many loops are there.
Yeah.
And or if you look in technology-wise, right. The computer world, how many billion bits of information is sitting in the subconscious? We're not aware of that.
Yeah.
Because consciously, even if you're bringing your memories in, we cannot access the subconscious that easily.
Mm-mm.
And we function 95% of the time subconsciously. So this is why that doesn't work. It's almost like what we are trying to do with these techniques and tools is firstly get to a, you know, mind-body, the body to be a little bit, you know, feeling better, which is why, and then the positive affirmations and, you know, aware of thought and replacing and everything. It's like we are trying to put in positive information in that subconscious to reprogram it, so automatically the negative die.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you have a room and it's dark, there is no point trying to get one piece of darkness away at a time. How are you going to do that? There's no way of doing that. It's so powerful to bring in such a powerful light that the negative, the darkness is gone.
And that's what meditation does. You know, the techniques are one thing, but on top of the techniques, the wisdom that you're providing, I'm just saying that, you know, and I think others might agree also, that there's a certain depth in what you're conveying. There's a certain vision. There's a wisdom. There is a certain strength that is being conveyed. If people resonate with that, who are listening to this, then that resonance is that light shining directly into that darkness and blowing it out of the water. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. That's what it is. So the meditation with the tools, we're trying to approach from all levels.
Yes, of course.
So that you just change this whole loop we've created.
So you know, you had mentioned in this recording or the previous one about, you know, in traditional psychotherapy, people tend to get dependent on therapists. They go through the same loops again and again. It's almost like the distinction between anger management versus anger dissolving. Anger management means or implies that anger is there and you're managing it, just controlling it, putting some band-aids around it, putting some boundaries around it, but not really penetrating into the depth of what actually anger is and where it comes from, and dissolving its root completely, you know, so that it prevents all the harmful. I mean, it looks like that's the distinction.
True. So, like I said, we cannot really go into the depth of the subconscious because there's too much in there. So it's almost like if you have a tabletop, if think about it, it has like a million legs. So what we're trying to do is literally with some of them to, even if you say, you know, it's resting on a million legs, if you take away 1,000 legs, it's going to topple. And disappear and break and shatter and disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we're trying to do by this is clearing only to a certain point, but then you introduce so much of power there that it just disappears.
You know, there's an analogy that comes to my mind, that sometimes you have a pond and you have that, you know, that green fungus on the pond, right? And let's say you've got a couple of kids with some stones on the edge of that pond and they're throwing rocks in that pond. They throw one rock and then that fungus on top seems to dissipate for a little while and then it comes back again. But they keep throwing rocks in there. Eventually the whole thing shatters.
Mm-hmm.
It's something like that. So the consistency of the meditation techniques with this understanding about staying in the present, law of attraction, you know, not being stuck internally, all the points that you are making, all of that can actually shatter the intrapsychic problems completely. That is the hypothesis, at least.
Absolutely. So that's what we're trying to do here, and that is going to be a beginning for a different journey in your life.
Different journey. So it, rather than going through a sequential process of of years and years of psychoanalysis and going through all kinds of depth psychology and stuff like that, using a different approach, which is really known as positive psychology, which I want to ask you about in our next recording, using a different approach where there is shining the light rather than analyzing the darkness.
Because remember, your thoughts, there's no end to the thoughts and where they're coming from. We don't even know that. So you cannot go and try to, like, you you know, clear each of the thoughts or you know where it's coming from. That will take like your whole life and you still not get there.
And then you lose time also in that.
And you still not get there. But what's happening to the current moment? You're still not living your life. Okay. So that is the whole problem with something like that, which is going to the depth and, oh, maybe you can look at it this way. Yes, there is some value to that.
Of course, of course.
Because you're
trying change of perspective in those kinds of
cognitive restructuring and everything.
Sure.
But you have to use multiple things. It's not just one thing which is going to be a done thing for a person. But when you do all these techniques and use it accordingly as you go along.
Sure, because it really sounds like, and we'll wrap up in just a moment here. It sounds to me that, you know, but if a person actually does what you're asking them to do and they are sincere about that and they recognize the coming of the negative loops, etc., plus they really harness the power of the present, then that's a natural therapy to the mind itself. You can put acceptance and commitment therapy in there. It's a type of CBT that you're kind of is being done naturally. It's also recognizing the content of the mind, which goes back to Freudian and Jungian psychology and the collective unconscious and all that. Recognizing that, but leaving it alone, essentially, you know. And then also things like reality therapy, like Glasser's reality therapy, where there is a sense of, this is what's going on in my life. What do I do now? What's my next step, essentially? You know. So there's that. And then you really have an aspect of experiential therapy in here too, which is you know looking at the full experience of life, not suppressing it, not denying it, not doing any of that, but being in a state of connection with it, and recognizing the negative versus the positive, and then making a choice about which way we want to go. Then that connects with decision theory, you know, the way decision making works. If you want to make any closing comments on this.
No, so that's what, you know, it's very, you don't have to delve into so much of psychology because it's very complicated.
Yeah. And it can get very complicated,
yes. So that's why, you know, and everybody's level is different, you know. So some people, it may help traditional psychotherapy, but some people it may not help. So, but I have seen, at least in my practice in all these years, people go in and out of therapy and, you know, some of them have the ability to do things themselves and they get along and they're okay. But I don't know if there is anybody who's 100% benefited from just psychotherapy.
Yeah, because psychotherapy, in the way it is done in this country or maybe throughout the world even, it's very much based on symptom reduction. You know, reduction of signs and symptoms based on DSM-5. Codes and DSM-5 diagnosis, which is like a medical model, you know. But what you're offering through Angel Wing, through meditation, is a very penetrative approach into the mind itself. I know there's a lot more to talk about in this because it's quite profound, but it's also not just analyzing the content of the mind. So I think there's that big difference.
No, absolutely. And there is more, you know, other aspects of going into, you know, what is the real nature? Who are we? Yeah. And things like that. Sure. So when you go depth into it and even knowledge-wise you attain it and eventually experience it, then there's even more awakening which comes to not be stuck in this, you know, in this whole loops which we are, you know, in which we're seeing. So,
yes. So let me just ask one final thing. You know, you use the word awakening, and maybe we can end with this right now. When you use that word, I mean, this is used by meditation teachers throughout the world. There's all kinds of, you know, ways of thinking about awakening. But when you use the word awakening, that implies, in my mind, that a person is not awakened, that they're stuck somewhere, they're asleep. I mean, not physically asleep necessarily, but they're asleep in the turmoils of life. They're awakened in the turmoils of life, but they're asleep to the actual. You know, there's that. Like, if you could just close today's a conversation with that distinction. When you use the word awakening, you know, what do you mean by that word as such? Just a brief comment on that, and then we can get into it in more depth later on sometime.
Yeah, so awakening just means that knowing that, remember, we talked about that space when you go into meditation.
The neutral space, yes.
The neutral space kind of gives you an idea about it's kind of like an awakening where you know that there's something more. It's not just being stuck in this, you know, in the mind and the body, which is the loop which we create in, which is what makes us feel stuck in the first place. So I think awakening to the fact of your true nature.
Yeah.
Now, this is a big, you know, I'm just giving you a definition to the best, you know, I can, is that's the, when I say true nature, we are, everybody knows we have a soul, we have something higher, and we are not just the body and the mind. They don't know what it is, but that's the...
Which is the kind of a belief that there's a soul.
Correct.
Yeah.
But that's good enough, at least to start off with. But when we go with meditation and you reach that point and say,
realize
there is a soul or there is something more, you know, that's the best way to put it.
Well, what happens if someone says to you that, we don't believe there's a soul. There's only this material process, the brain. And I don't want to get into a philosophical discussion necessarily on that, but how would you respond to that? Or how would you respond to such individuals in the meditation classes or others who do not accept that there is a soul or some higher power or some higher energy? Or what is your response to that?
It doesn't matter. They don't have to believe in it.
Yeah.
All they have to do is, it's an experiment again. The point is, where are you now in your mind and body? Are you happy? Meaning, are you okay where you are? Now, this is only for people who want to get out of that, you know, mire they're stuck in,
right,
which is the suffering. And right, if you want to get out of it, and in meditation, each of them has their own experience.
Sure. So what you're saying is that whether one has a belief in soul or God or higher power, whatever it might be, whatever the belief may be, meditation is an exploratory personal journey, you know, as opposed to simply a belief that there is something there and then just remaining there. We talk about that distinction.
Absolutely. That's all there is. So whether one believes in the soul or the spirit or higher intelligence or universal intelligence or God, whatever, you don't have to. You just have to. Meditation is not a, it has nothing to do with religion or spirituality. It is just a technique, a tool which you're using. It's a gateway to go into that space, to enter into that field, to know something more than what you already know.
Which is awakening.
Yes.
To know something more than what you already know, to be in a space beyond what you, where you are. And that's the gateway. So meditation is a gateway. You know, more than anything else, because there's a lot of confusion about this. You know, people think of meditation in so many ways. So.
No, it's not a goal at all. In fact, it is just the beginning. And to see where it goes and what you get from it, and your exploration is what it is.
Yes.
The fact is to say that, firstly, that this cannot be it. That is a great way to start, saying that I cannot believe as humans we've come to this earth or whatever, I am here, and this is all I have to go through.
Well, you know, in many ways, that's how scientific development has occurred.
Exactly.
That's how advances in medical sciences have occurred also, by exploration in area. And you're talking about an inward opening, an inward awakening. That's what I was asking you about.
Yes, so that's the awakening. And, you know, we can, you know, elaborate on it
in another
recording.
All right, very good. Anything else you want to say? That's it? Okay. All right, thank you very much, Dr. Jetna. Very nice. Great.